This is the March 2018 session of the International Low Vision Support Group. I'm Dan Roberts. We in our International Low Vision Support community are an eclectic mix of people who have come together for one reason: to enjoy the company and wisdom of others who are dealing with vision loss. We represent all walks of life as teachers, students, artists, musicians, homemakers, business people, laborers, and service providers. We all began by traveling different roads, but we ended up taking the same turn that led us to this unexpected place. A place where we find comfort in joining with others who see the world through imperfect eyes. This presentation is a reading of a small part of my collection of the most memorable messages, essays, and poems from the past two decades of sharing amongst us. For reasons of privacy, only first names of authors will be given in most cases. Some of these friends have passed on, but they're still with us through their writings. These words are meant to be shared freely and often, in hopes that they will encourage and inspire others who travel this path, and that they will help the normally sighted community understand the unique and challenging world in which we've found ourselves. This is how we see things, through our eyes. A Drop of Rain by Tabby. From my warm chair, I watch it move. I know it's cold and alone. It slides slowly and then picks up speed. And then it's gone from my box view into its world. While my traitorous vision won't confirm it, I know it's another drop of rain. I wish sometimes I could storm and thunder. I want sad droplets to make their treks down my face, not my window. But I know with an alarming certainty that it won't happen. I turn my anger on my sorrow and build walls against the rain. I hear, "You don't have to be strong," and I toughen my resolve. I hear, "It's okay to cry," and I set my jaw against emotion. I hear, "We care," and suddenly, a wall that took all of my effort to build becomes a door. The Encounter by Ralph. Standing alone, I sip my drink. People around, I try to think. No need for panic. Some are friends, but I can find them. That depends. To find someone, I have to be somewhere where someone can see me. For otherwise, I'll pass them by, their face escaping from my eye. I wait, and soon someone comes near, though where they're looking isn't clear. It seems they're coming right at me. I brace myself. Who can it be? Familiar carriage, shape, and gait, but still unsure, I hesitate. Too many times I've felt the sting that using the wrong name can bring. I shift my gaze from side to side in hopes that they'll be identified, but features I should recognize remain elusive from my eyes. It's nothing new. I have no choice. I wait until I hear the voice. A welcome sound still makes me sad. He touches me and says, "Hi, Dad." Just Hard by Becky for her husband, who lives with vision loss from retinitis pigmentosa. My husband, Joe, can know you're there but have no idea who you are. Can watch a movie but miss all the full screen action, any dim scenes, and all the subtitles. Can see the sky but not the stars. Can read a book but can't find the book. Can paint the entire house and the next night not see the house. Can put up sheetrock and install fixtures but not see the tools at his feet. can craft an intricately detailed guitar and not be able to locate it in a room. My husband Joe is defined by the state as a catastrophic disability. It is defined by those who have it by the series of adjustments that make up life. Is not sighted enough to be sighted. Is sighted enough to get around in a restaurant, awkwardly hesitating, then bumping into people while finding the way to the table or the men's room. Is not blind enough to be blind. Is blind enough to need a cane to avoid stumbling, yet able to look you right in the eyes while you speak. Sometimes it's hard to know what's worse, explaining how sighted you are to the sighted world or how blind you are to the blind world. It's hard to justify your ability to explain your disability. Hard, I know, for people to understand. Hard, I know, to experience. Not impossible. Just hard. A Miracle by Dan. A miracle came my way when I awoke today. I saw my room in color, not just shades of gray. My family in the photos smiled unblemished from the wall. The lamp that once was crooked now stood straight and tall. The titles on my dusty books glowed clearly from the shelf, and in the mirror beside my bed, I could see myself. I reveled in that moment between wakefulness and sleep, but knew it was a fleeting gift I'm not allowed to keep. So, with some regret, I thanked the sender of the prize and let it go where all dreams go as I opened up my eyes. A Secret Place by Sharon. I once could see the looks they gave for people like me. Some pity, confusion, and even shock that someone couldn't see. Like speaking with foreign words, it's hard to understand the uncommon particularities of a partially sighted man. I struggle with the secret of what to tell and when, to face the discomfort sooner or to continue to pretend. My vision has no destination, no arrival point. Yet, to make loss my focus would only disappoint. I've met those insidious thieves, fear, doubt, and pride. Still, I find myself allowing them to be my guide. I thank God for courage, for others who remind that spending time with thoughts that lie is worse than wasting time. For no matter how long we do it, the same truth remains. The one we'll find in that secret place, the body can't restrain. New Beginnings by Tom. This coming Thursday, I say goodbye to a career path that stretches back nearly two decades. It seems I can't keep the pace any longer. I'm dragging my team down when only a year ago I was propelling it forward. It's time to go. You know, some things we choose and some things just happen, but all in all, one's life can get to be like a cluttered closet. I can stand back from it all now and see what and why and how things happened and choose again what I would do differently the next time around. I can clean out the closet and decide what to keep and what to toss, because it's as though nothing needs to necessarily carry forward except my love for special people and my most basic principles. This time there'll be no more clever strategies to keep myself on the same path the way I did with early vision setbacks. This is the time to harvest the lessons and blessings of the past, immerse myself in some of that laid-back peace, and through a mixture of discovery, recovery, and decision-making, build a fresh life organized in new ways and carried forward by new means. I'm not losing everything by losing a career or even all those strategic adjustments made to keep it afloat as my eyesight dimmed. I'm glad for every piece of it, but won't mourn its passing. Every 24 hours the world spins around and a new day replaces the one before it, no matter what we have, what we do, what we lose, or what we choose. Sometimes what we do is a pain when we do it, but later it's a memory. And all memories are resources if we choose to accept them as such. I've chosen to simply harvest the bounty of the past, assess the lessons I've learned, and sow the seeds for a new future. If you have a thankfulness for what you've received and a faith that life always has possibility, there's no reason to fear. Be my witnesses. I'll see less, but I'll do more, and give more, and receive more. To me, there are only two choices. Either you harvest the best from the past, learn from the mistakes, and keep yourself active so that life's possibilities can be found, or you sink into despair, wither and shrivel, and become a faded memory of who you once were, and a shadow of who you ought to be. And you can't see shadows anymore. Blessings on My Path by Beverly Castellini. This essay was submitted by Mike Goldberg, Beverly's rehabilitation counselor at the Vermont Division for the Blind and Visually Impaired. She wrote, "Macular degeneration is something I had heard about all my life because my mother's family had experienced it before it was popular. Macular degeneration was genetically imposed on me in middle age. I was surprised because I felt too young to walk down a blind path. For a year or two, waking up each morning was painful. I would open my eyes and think, 'Oh no, I don't want to be blind.' Now, even though my sight is still deteriorating, I cheerfully say, 'Good morning.' I smile as I swing my legs over the side of the bed. I scramble round for two slippers. I find one of them, and my other foot is searching around when I hit my dog's soft muzzle. Jade doesn't complain, but stands and stretches before following me to the kitchen. Now I face the first challenge of the day, making my morning pot of coffee. I reach and find the coffee canister. I pick up some coffee with a scoop in my right hand. First, I put my left index finger into the scoop. Is this scoop full? If it is, this is my first big success. With my thumb as my guide, I fill the coffee pot. While the coffee is brewing, I go to the bathroom and wash my hands and face. Brushing my teeth is more tricky than brushing my hair. I've learned to squirt the toothpaste onto my finger and to check the toothbrush to make sure that the bristles are pointed at my teeth and not pointed at my upper lip or my nose. This may seem absurd, but the backside of the toothbrush won't do too much to make my teeth sparkle. The coffee's brewed, I pour myself a cup. Before pouring, I pause for a second to make sure the cup is right side up. The coffee was good. Now I have enough energy to walk down my blind garden path, but first I need to hitch Jade. Now I can give all my attention to the beauty ahead. I trip over a rock on the way, and I do stumble. This hurts so badly, so much, that I can't do anything except wish to cry. However, I can't walk down the path with tears in my eyes, for I'll probably stumble more. But I will keep walking slowly, so I won't trip too many times. I do fall on the green grass, which is comforting. It's soft and sweet. I'll sit here and enjoy my sense world. I breathe in the smell of the sweet clover, and I rub a stone and feel its smoothness. Above my head, I hear a robin scolding me, asking me to move away from her nest high up in the branches. My left foot stubs a persistent stone and disturbs it, bringing worms to light. I move on quietly. I don't want to alarm that robin nor her babies. I reach the foot of the path. I stand looking out across the meadow. I hear in the distance the water from the small stream trickling down from the pine forest. I see the fields dotted with daisies and black-eyed Susans. I feel the eyes of the daisies and of the black-eyed Susans, and they stare back at me. I am slightly jealous of their seeing eyes. There was a shower in the night, so it causes the brook to trickle a little more loudly. That water and the early morning dew make my sneakers squish. I almost enjoy the sound. I watch my footsteps as I move around the wild buttercups. A small gray toad hops across my path and moves away. I take two steps and move homeward. On my left, the toad inspects the bleeding hearts. They politely bow to him. The coral bells sway in the gentle breeze. I can't hear them, but I do hear my dog, Jade, calling me home. I step through the wooden gate and say goodbye to the flowers, the toad, and the robins. Back in my kitchen, I pour myself another cup of coffee and count my blessings. Getting My Mail by Susan. I was pacing slowly down the sidewalk so I wouldn't trip over that crack like I did the day before. With the mail in one hand, I shaded my eyes with the other. My sunglasses were the recommended kind, but I realized I should have worn my big hat to keep the sun from glaring off of them. I heard the click-clack of skateboard wheels coming at me head-on. A few years ago, I would have stepped aside. I didn't know which way to step, so I just froze in place, hoping the pilot of that conveyance would have good maneuvering skills. He didn't. He collided with my left hip, and his ride escaped into the street. He ran after it, and I screamed at the sound of a blaring horn and the tires scraping on loose gravel. The boy returned unharmed and slammed his skateboard back onto the concrete walk. He stood in silence for a few seconds, probably scowling at me. Then, with a push of a toe, he was off again, leaving me standing there, wondering how I would get my mail from then on. A Blouse for Church by Edna. All I wanted to do was press my blouse for church. So I found the board and my old steam iron with no difficulty, because I've learned to be very organized, and set them up in the kitchen. After plugging in the iron by feeling for the socket and somehow not electrocuting myself, I discovered that the reservoir was empty. As the iron heated up, I filled a measuring cup at the sink and returned to perform what used to be a simple procedure. I never thought pouring water would be such a challenge. That was a tiny little hole, and I had to hit it directly with no central vision. It would have been easy if I'd had a funnel, but who owns a funnel anymore? I guess I could have made one out of paper, but that would have meant finding paper, scissors, and tape. This shouldn't be so difficult, and I don't have the time. I tried making a funnel out of my fingers and only made a mess. That's when I decided to just wear the blouse wrinkled. Who would care anyway? I'm an old blind lady, for Pete's sake, I said aloud. What do they expect? I started to cry, and that made me mad. And the madder I got, the harder I cried. Then a big tear dropped onto the blouse, and I flashed back to my mother, sprinkling water on my pinafore with her fingers. How stupid of me, I thought. And within an hour, I was at church with a freshly ironed blouse, done the old-fashioned way. An email from Michael, shared by Patrick. Hi, Grandpa. I can't believe you actually emailed me. So you're a computer geek now. or maybe a computer geezer, haha. Seriously, I am really proud of how well you're doing. I know it was rough for a while and you didn't think you could do it, but look at you. Mom says you get around great and no one even knows you have what you call crooked eyes unless you tell them. I still drive your truck all the time, but I'm being really careful. Like you said, you might want it back someday if the cure comes, so I better not put any dings in it. I take it to college every day where I would never have gotten to go if it weren't for that truck, not to mention the money you saved for me. Someday when I'm a rich doctor, I'll pay you back, I promise. It's cool that you still go fishing and even still tie your own flies. And you walk to the mailbox every day when it snows. And you can read your own mail, too. Maybe not like you used to, but close. Sounds to me like nothing has changed, which really surprises me. I mean, surprises me in a good way. Not like I didn't expect it, but like, wow. You know what I mean? Anyway, I know it sounds corny, but you doing so great makes me believe anything is possible. Like if what happened to you ever happens to me, I know I'll be okay because you're okay. And if you can do it, so can I, being your grandson and everything. And I promise I'll take care of my eyes and eat like you said and not smoke anymore, sniff, because I know being your grandson maybe doesn't mean that all I'm going to inherit is your good looks. I'll be home next weekend, Grandpa, and we'll go for a ride and watch some football or something. You can keep emailing me if you want, because I like hearing from you, but someday you got to learn how to text. Maybe I'll show you how when I get home. Can you do that, or do you have some kind of high-tech software I never heard of that does it for you? I never know what to believe anymore when it comes to you. Well, I have some studying to do now, so I better get to work. I just want you to know how much I appreciate you for showing me the kind of courage it takes to deal with whatever life throws my way. I just hope I can be the same kind of role model for my future grandkids. Take care of yourself, Grandpa, and I'll see you soon. Love, Michael. Finally, here is an excerpt from blind author John Hull's wonderful book titled On Sight and Insight, A Journey into the World of Blindness. This chapter was called Between You and Me, A Smile by John Hull. Yesterday morning, I was kneeling on the floor, helping my 4-year-old daughter to get dressed. When she was finished, I stood her up in front of me and said, "Now, let's have a look at you." I held her face lightly between my hands while she stood there and gave her a big smile. We remained like that for a moment, and then she said, "Daddy, how can you smile between you and me when I smile and when you smile because you're blind?" I laughed and said, "You mean, how do I know when to smile at you?" "Yes," she said, "when you're blind." "It's true, darling," I said, "that visually impaired people don't often know when to smile at people. And I often don't know when to smile at you, do I?" She agreed. "But today, because you were standing there and I was smiling at you, I thought you were probably smiling at me. Were you?" Happily, she replied, "Yes." So this little child is able to articulate the breakdown which blindness causes in the language of smiles. I noticed the fine distinction she made by implication between smiling at someone and the smiling which takes place between people. I cannot describe my emotions as I reflected upon the fact that she had had so many experiences of smiling at me, but the in-between smile was, for her and me, not only a great rarity, but a puzzle. I had endured a terrible loss and simultaneously had been given a wonderful lesson. As I bring this presentation to a close, let's remember these things. We're not alone in our thoughts and feelings. Losing vision is hard, but we can deal with it. And smile a lot, because someone might be smiling back. Unless otherwise noted, these writings and more may be accessed at no cost online or ordered in large print book form by selecting Through Our Eyes at lowvision.preventblindness.org/publications.